Welcome to Renzo Republic.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the one and only Remso Republic podcast. I'm your host, as always, Remso W. Martinez. For all of you listening through our satellite and terrestrial radio stations, LRN.FM, and all the folks that like to listen to us during the red eye hours, welcome. If you're listening to us through iTunes, Player FM, all that jazz, auto radio, thank you again. Do me a quick favor, go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Remso101, that's R-E-M-S-O-101. Follow me, I'll follow you back, that way we can go ahead and expand our ever-loving Liberty family. Because if you're a new listener, let me tell you, we've got a bit of a mission here. It's super cheesy, definitely a ripoff, but maybe if you're like our longtime listeners, the other thousands in the Remso Republic Army, you'll go ahead and learn to love it. It's this, making freedom fun again. Let me repeat that. It's making freedom fun again. The ideas of individual liberty, free markets, limited government, the concept that you do you, I do me. We don't use the government as a violent middleman, and we can go ahead and live our lives peacefully and prosperously. Common sense knowledge for most of you, but sadly, for a good chunk of our American society, it's considered radical thinking. And radical thinking is our theme this season as we discuss the disruptors, the idea of creative disruption, this idea of taking an idea and turning it into action and changing the way people think, engage with each other, and overall the world around us. And when it comes to what brought me in, it was these ideas began to jump around in my head during the early, I'm not going to say early 2000s, but it was around the time of the first term of the Obama administration. It was the rise of the Tea Party. You saw these people talking about ideas that both the Republicans and the Democrats hated. And typically when you think of your stereotypical Tea Partier, you won't think of a libertarian like Matt Kibbe. You won't think of someone like Becky Gerritsen, who would then jump into the fray. You'd think of, you know, a lot of the liberal stereotypes that they throw at Tea Partiers. But, you know, basically, what it was the political movement of the 21st century. It surpassed Occupy Wall Street in terms of impact. It surpasses even now what this, quote, resistance movement with the left is trying to do. It's all AstroTurf. But it's not good enough in this episode just to talk about the impact of the Tea Party. That's been done 20 million different ways to Sunday. What I want to do is I want to talk to one of the faces of the Tea Party from when it was still back in those early Ron Paul days, because this individual, who's an author, an activist, and successful in her own right in terms of impacting those around her, she has a story that, well, if I were to say it, I couldn't do it justice. So I thought I'd go ahead and bring her on. Ladies and gentlemen, from Indiana, one of the founders of the Indiana Tea Party, Miss Melissa Hubbard. Melissa, thank you so much for joining the program tonight.
It's an honor to be with you.
I greatly appreciate that. So your book, Spanking City Hall, just right there, the title, most people will see that and they'll think, okay, it's some type of like, you know, soft porn romance novel. But it's not. And in terms of your life and what you've done since you've gotten into the political fray, you have done what most people wish they could do, which is lead a political movement, inspire activists, and spread this message of peace, love, and liberty. So tell us a little bit about yourself, because when it comes to Tea Party stereotypes, you would not match a lot of the images that people would typically come up and think of when they think, okay, what's your stereotypical Tea Partier?
Well, you know, I would match one stereotype in that, you know, I'm tall and blonde. I think they think we're all white, but but that's not reality at all. In fact, the Tea Party movement that I founded in Indiana, and it was the first widely televised Tea Party event, and I cannot understate or even overstate how wildly successful we are or were. I guess, you know, the movement is still, you know, successful, but the a quarter of our inner core of activists were black. A lot of people don't know that. I mean, there were times in those early days when, you know, I would host activist meetings in my home with the inner core, and, you know, a good portion of the room would be filled with ex-Black Panthers.
Wow.
You didn't know that, did you?
No, I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes you'll hear people say, well, we had a couple Black people show up, but to say you had a room of Black Panthers, I could definitely see an anti-establishment overlap, but it's not one of those things that you would typically hear. And that's the beautiful thing about the Tea Party movement. We allowed the left to kind of tell our story. And when you go ahead and you meet the people that were Tea Party activists, they came from every different race, creed, and color, and they all just had one thing in common. It's the fact that our government wasn't representing the people, and that our individual natural rights were being impeded on primarily from the federal government. So during those early days, what were kind of the, you know, what were some of the things that were bringing, you know, people like you, a tall blonde, and then, you know, a whole bunch of Black Panthers into the same room together? Because that's not necessarily a mix that you would typically find.
Well, you have to go back to the years prior. From about the year 2001 until the end of 05, so roughly about 5 years, I was a high-end dominatrix. I live in the same neighborhood of the Indiana governor's mansion. In fact, Vice President Mike Pence has lived in that mansion in my neighborhood. The city government, I was politically naive as well. I you know, I had a low-key dominance. I did see clients from all over the country and sometimes internationally, and they would come to Indiana to see me, but it was very low-key practice. There was no sex for hire. I did everything I could to know the laws and follow the letter of the law. And I've always been, you know, a person that believes that the laws are there, you know, to some extent to protect us. But anyway, going forward, there was a Democrat mayor of Indianapolis at that time, and his name was Bart Peterson. He got me on his radar. And I don't know how it happened, but the powers that be that at City Hall decided that it would be a great idea to use me as a photo op for the mayor. The mayor was, you know, merging some departments and doing various things, and he needed a distraction in the media. And I believe, and I still do to this day, that that's why I was chosen. I think that they thought I'd be easy prey. So the next thing I know, there's a vice cop investigating my business in a session. The session and what I did to him is fully told in the first chapter of my book, Spanking City Hall. I kind of turned the tables on him. The next thing I know, it's 6 weeks later, there's a knock at the door. It's Channel 6 from Indianapolis and a reporter named Jack Reinhart. He had a copy of a lawsuit with my name on it in his hand and was showing it to me through, you know, through the sidelight windows of my front door. And right behind him was a sheriff's car. So the newsman and the sheriff were right there to see me be served a lawsuit from the city of Indianapolis for my practice as a dominatrix. Home-based businesses in Indianapolis are allowed. So you are allowed to be a teacher and a tutor, which is effectively what I was doing. Then I learned that the next day there was going to be a big press conference in downtown Indianapolis, an outdoor press conference. And I found out where it was, and I went down there, and there had to have been 100, I don't know if there were 200 people, but there were at least 100. And there was like a podium, and the mayor was flanked on both sides by public officials. They literally did a full court press conference. All the news trucks were there, as well as the city paper, which is the Indianapolis Star. The mayor asserted that, I was running this house of ill repute, even though they knew I wasn't. They had investigated me, and I had broken no laws. And I talk about the details of that day in my book. But I made a decision that day that I was going to fight. I was politically naive. I couldn't, tell you what person was a Republican and what person was a Democrat. I was basically apathetic, but I had to learn at that point. So, if you're going to defeat an enemy, you have to first understand what your enemy is and to learn it. So I made it my business from that day forward to learn City Hall, and I studied it like a soap opera. It takes a long time to learn a soap opera if you start watching one. You have to learn the cast of characters and their backstories, etc. So I spent about a year and a half studying City Hall and this would have been in the year 2006 and early 07. So I was reading blogs. We didn't really have Facebook and Twitter back then. Social media wasn't as advanced as it is now. But the blogs in Indiana, there were a lot of political blogs, and a lot of them were written by lawyers. And I gleaned a lot of information, not only from the bloggers' content that they published, but as importantly, from the anonymous comments. It didn't take me long to realize that anonymous comments were whistleblowers inside the Indiana State House and also City Hall of Indianapolis. And I paid a lot of attention to those anons because what they said made sense, and what TV said didn't make sense. And I already knew that TV lied because they took the mayor's message about me and put it in the media, even though it was a lie.
I'm still finding it hard. History shows a lot of this. When you look in context, it's different. But it's so funny that the Democratic Party, which says that there's no sexual action to elicit, there's no anything that can't be bended or changed, they're going after you, and you weren't even having sex with anyone.
Oh no, if I did sex for hire, that would make me submissive to my client and not the dominant, right?
Yeah, a lot of the stuff is, well, it's somewhat alien to me, but it's just what it shows me is something that I hear far too often from many of the people that were in the initial Tea Party movement. It's this: I was politically apathetic. I paid my taxes. I went to work. I took care of my family. I kept to myself. And then one day, some law, some bureaucrat, some politician took an interest in me for no other reason than simply a power gain. And then I had to get involved. It was always out of self-defense. And what you're describing and what your book talks more about is that self-defense action, this idea that if you don't take an interest in your government is going to take an interest in you. Is that accurate?
Oh, and absolutely. But here's the weird thing about it. I founded this movement, but honestly, it was God. Maybe a year and a half, 2 years before this happened, I was, I call it meditation. People call it prayer. It's, basically listening for the voice of God. And God very clearly said to me, one day you will have to face off with the government. And I got scared when I heard that. I said, no, not me. And God said, yes, you. And when the time is right, you're going to be given every tool you need to prevail. Do not fear. There was this overwhelming message of do not fear. And honestly, it was the do not fear part of it that just made me relax and say, okay, I will cross that bridge when the time comes. And in that time came, I guess it was about a couple years later. And in founding the Tea Party in these improbable circumstances, I mean, I was in the media and the courts. Now, I wasn't being prosecuted for any criminal charges. They came after me on a zoning violation. But since when does a zoning violation require a full court press conference downtown?
Oh, that's not even a press conference. That's, you know, that's a lynching at that point. That's a Salem witch trial. But Melissa, I want to keep this conversation going. We've got to go ahead and pay the bills around here and hit our first commercial break. Folks, before I do that, our sponsor this half hour has something he wants me to go ahead and ask you. It's very simple. What if your money could go ahead and grow itself while you slept? Would you want it to? Would you say, no money, don't grow, don't double, don't triple, don't quadruple, don't quantruple, whatever, if that's even a number, numeral, whatever. Go ahead and learn about this investment opportunity over at joinhelium.com. That's joinhelium.com, joinhelium.com, and let your money grow for you. I'm Remso W. Martinez, a special guest, Melissa Hubbard. You're listening to The Remso Republic. We'll be right back after this.
Take the show on the go by subscribing to The Remso Republic on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and YouTube. Don't be left out.
Lynchburg is a city that embodies the spirit of service Virginia is known for. I'm Albert Billingsley, and I'm running to promote free enterprise, accountability, and trust in the Lynchburg City Council. Check out my website, billingsleyforlynchburg.com, and help us let Lynchburg lead the way. I'm Albert Billingsley, and I approve this message.
Hello, my name is Alex Merced. And I am a libertarian. I invite you to join me in spreading the message of liberty. Come down to alexmerced.com where you can find videos and lots of other media to help educate you about liberty and more. I've also created learneconomicsnow.com as a quick way to show anyone the basics about economics. Libertarian101.com, a great starting place to learn what is libertarianism, how to get involved, and how to move things forward. IntroToLiberty.com, where you can learn more about how to spread the message of liberty through positive messaging from people like myself, Larry Sharp, and Michael Pickens. And don't forget LibertarianPodcast.com, where you can find an exhaustive list of libertarian podcasts for you to enjoy. This is Alex Merced. Follow me on social media such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and more. And thank you very much.
Hey guys, Tim Preuss here, and I wanted to take a minute and invite you to stop over to PreussPodcast.com and give our show a listen. We've got in-depth commentary on the issues that matter to you.
These hookers. Fucking whores are out there.
They're hookers, man, I tell you.
Yeah, that's like the most contact I've had with the hooker.
It's them yelling at you.
Them yelling at me at Twitter.
We break down the most pressing issues of our time.
This what? Large lady with, like, tight clothing on. Not appropriately linked tight clothing either.
And we get the most intelligent analysis from friends of ours like Jeffrey Tucker.
You pulled over, engine trouble, and what happened? I don't know.
Seriously, though, we love putting on a show that both entertains and educates. We're growing, and we'd be thrilled if you joined us. Check out PreussPodcast.com for more. That's PreussPodcast.com.
Folks, welcome back to the program. We're going to go ahead and continue this conversation from earlier. So, Melissa, so the actions taken from the state against you had nothing to do with your business as a dominatrix, it had everything to do with a zoning violation. And then from there, they went ahead and they tried to make you a pariah. They tried to use you as a distraction for this growth and expansion of local government. But, you know, this is all covered in her book, folks, Spanking City Hall. We'll go ahead and link to that in the show notes so you can go ahead and grab your copy. I have this question, and, you know, I want to kind of switch the mindset if we could for a moment. We were talking about the stereotypes of a Tea Party activist, how the left has been telling our story for us, and only until recently we're finally getting that voice back. But a large majority of my audience is very Christian conservative. They you know, they're very right of center sometimes. And it's so funny because I'm as hardcore libertarian as it comes. I know some people will disagree with me, but, you know, it's just how I am. I'm not quick to judge, but in terms of what people do in their own lives, as long as they're not hurting me or impeding on my liberty, I really just don't give a crap. But with you, I've seen this with other people that have not done things as, let's call it, taboo. It's if you don't match this perfect stereotype of what we see as a Christian conservative, especially in the political sphere, we're going to go ahead and persecute you. We're going to run you off and make sure you never come back. In terms of what was happening, and at this point, your whole life, you know, your whole laundry list of everything is out in public. What was the reaction you were getting from other conservative activists as you began to take the lead on everything?
Well, I was attacked by Democrats and liberals as being, you know, this terrible, immoral woman. And you have to remember, from the time that I was persecuted by the mayor until I founded the Tea Party, it was a year and a half. There was a year and a half space in there where I was studying City Hall and fighting my lawsuit in the courts, and also to some extent fighting in the media. I was thrown into the media by the mayor. I never went out seeking the mayor or seeking the media. It was put on me. And I did manage to successfully use it to fight in the end. But the way I was received by Christians and conservatives was, honestly, it was beautiful. I didn't get very much judgment. There was a tiny little bit from one faction, but nobody took that faction very seriously anyway. I mean, you're run-of-the-mill, day-in, day-out, Republicans, libertarians, and conservatives. They embraced me in love and non-judgment. And I had been a practicing dominatrix with a dungeon for 5 years. And these folks hugged me. They told me I was beautiful. They thanked me profusely for the work that I did. I mean, I was really welcomed by them. And many of those people from those early Tea Party days, you know, are still, you know, friends with me today. It was the Democrats who did the slut shaming, the C word, slut, bitch, whore, bull dyke. All of these things have been said about me publicly by Democrats for nothing more than being a strong, dominant woman with her own business.
Were you always, you know, a religious person? I mean, were you a practicing Christian while you were a dominatrix? And how did your faith and everything going on during those days kind of interact with each other?
Well, I've known I was a revolutionary since I was 6 years old, and I'm born on George Washington's birthday.
Well, there you go.
Okay. I've always known I was a revolutionary. It was just always within me. I was raised in the church. I did go to a Christian college. Would I march around telling everyone that I was a Christian? No. But I always talked to God. I always did. And I've always believed in the end, the righteous will win. And so, you know, I guess you could say I was a Christian, probably like a lot of people are. Maybe not the best one, but, you know, I would never denounce Christ or God.
How, you know, did you continue with your services after you became more of a public figure, or did they just kind of end because of all the ruckus going on?
Yeah, I had actually been intending to quit that business and go back into the business world again as an account executive, because I had been an account executive before I quit to be a dominatrix full time. And it's a long story about how I became a dom. I mean, there were a lot of circumstances. I didn't want to do it, but God, and I still feel to this day that God pushed me into it, because I needed to learn some things there.
If you could give us, I know this is really unfair, if you could give us like a quick, like, you know, just like 60 second run around, how did you get involved in this? I'm sorry, I'm just too curious.
I can't do it in 60 seconds. That's why I had to write a book.
Fair enough.
I can't do it justice in 60 seconds, but you got to take my word about it. There were a lot of coincidences. There were a lot of supernatural things about it that were going on at that time in my life. And it was as if God wasn't going to have it any other way. Now, I did take a very important lesson from it, because I worked with dominance and control every day. That was my lifestyle. That was my work. I learned how to take control. And one thing you got to understand, the government is authored to be the submissive. We, the people, are authored to be the dominant. Now, I met a lot of doms who weren't very good doms, myself included sometimes, and if you didn't keep on top of your subs, they would run around like wayward children. It's the same thing with parenting. I mean, that's a great parallel with a parent. If the parent isn't doing a good job of being the dominant over their children are going to run wild and run all over them, right?
So how did that kind of help in terms of having to deal with the world of media and politics? What were some of the lessons you were able to take from that world and put them into the world of politics?
Well, the year that the Tea Party came into being, and by the way, our movement started before I knew who Ron Paul was, okay? Now, the Ron Paul Tea Party movement really started getting into gear a few months later. But I had nothing to do with Ron Paul. I did later become a big supporter of his, an activist, a donor, etc. But in those days, I didn't know who he was. And I didn't know who the Koch brothers were either. It basically, the Tea Party started because of the Anon comments and the information I got from the blogs, that I saw that Indiana was about to have a property tax storm and the consequences were going to be devastating for Indiana homeowners. They were preparing to reassess all properties in Indiana, and the bills were being reassessed at levels where people couldn't even afford to pay their property tax bills. I was able, because of the intelligence that I learned from Indiana bloggers, I was able to front run that, get to my neighbors before their bills hit. And you have to remember, I live in the neighborhood where the Indiana governor's mansion is. So all of the people in that neighborhood are, well, a lot of them are very prominent citizens. Let's put it that way. So I went house to house to warn my neighbors with homemade flyers. I told them that they were going to get bills they would not be able to afford to pay, that I knew activists, and they were libertarian activists, that we had solutions, and they just simply needed to meet at the governor's mansion on the 4th of July. We didn't call it a tea party on the 4th of July. We just called it a rally. But it was in earnest, started July 4th, 2007. At that rally, there was a man in the audience like that shouted out, "We need a tea party." I heard those words and he had me at party because I love to throw parties. And I'm like, that's what we'll call this thing. We're just going to call it a tea party. This is perfect. So I latched onto that idea for branding. I knew that it would brand very well and I ran with it. And by July 28th, 2007 is when we had the first tea party in earnest. The closest people to me that helped were libertarians, Sean Shepard, who was Indiana's fair tax director, and Andy Horning, who is running for U.S. Senate in Indiana. They were two libertarian policy guys that helped me with this. I did the media coordinating and I did like flyers and hugging people. I hugged a lot of people. That was a big part of my job, was hugging and thanking and coordinating and scheduling the rallies and making it fun. I called it doing antics in the media. And my job was whatever we did to make sure the media showed up, and they did. What we ended up accomplishing was massive. We gave cover for Governor Daniels to cut state spending by 10%. Governor Daniels also took control of the property tax crisis and steered through two legislative sessions and a referendum a 1% permanent property tax cap to be placed in the Indiana Constitution. We also threw out the mayor that persecuted me with a guy who's no one knew his name 4 months before the election. And we're not a small town. It's Indianapolis, Indiana. I think we're ranked like 12th largest city in the country. 4 months before the election, no one knew his opponent's name, and that opponent was outspent 30-1. And we put that opponent, Mayor Greg Ballard, into office. So we had major, major victories. And for some reason, I was able to accomplish this while the entire time I'm fighting to clear my name in the Indianapolis court system, and I was in the media for having been a dominatrix. Meanwhile, I'm being embraced and loved by Christians and Republicans while I'm demonized as a dominatrix by Democrats. So that is the true story of how the Tea Party is founded. I have lots and lots of source documentation. I know where everything is. I even know who coined the word teabagger. It was coined by the Indiana Democratic Party's communications director. Her name...
Oh, that is insane.
Her name is Jen Wagner. At the first Indiana Tea Party, there were children. Families came to that event. By the end of the day, we were branded Teabagger, and it stuck. Now, I don't know why anyone would think it was funny to label families with a derogatory sexual term, but the communications director of the Indiana Democratic Party at that time thought that was funny. I have documentation of that. In fact, for your listeners who are on Twitter, if you go to @SpankCityHall, under my moments in @SpankCityHall, you can find all kinds of source documentation of the original Tea Party founding. I documented everything very carefully. I had a blog. All of the bloggers in town at that time documented what was going on with the Indiana Tea Party. And then by the end of the year, so we won the election in November of 07, the biggest election upset in the history of the state of Indiana. And by the end of the year, I received the country's first National Tea Party Prize awarded by the Sam Adams Alliance and Foundation out of Chicago. I only this year found out that they were funded by the Koch brothers. I never really until this year. So the Koch brothers did give me $5,000, but I didn't know who they were. So we had massive victory. And I want to say, too, that at that time, that was the year Breitbart started. And I don't know that I did this consciously, but unconsciously, I harnessed culture. And that's what made the difference. Andrew Breitbart said that politics is downstream from culture. The former dominatrix in me wants to say culture is the only thing that will put policy and politicians and politics on its knees. So I encourage people to do culture. And plus, culture is a lot more fun than politics.
You can't party in politics. But political, people want to have fun. And, you know, I constantly drop that Breitbart quote constantly, but and you're absolutely right. But this is an era where people are understanding that when you live your life authentically, when you're living in a situation where you understand that only free people can make a difference and that government is supposed to be the servant of the people, not its master. That's how revolutions begin. And when it comes to the Tea Party, I mean, people say it's dead, people say it was a failure, but, you know, whether it was all these moments leading up to, you know, this big discussion over the relevancy of the two-party system, the rise of third parties, state nullification, all these things. It had to start not with one person, but with a collective of people that said, I'm going to fight for my life and my right to live my life as I see fit. So, Melissa, thank you so much for coming on. This was an absolute blast to tell your story. Folks, you can go ahead and get her book, Spank City Hall. Melissa, how can they grab a copy? Spanking City Hall. How can they grab a copy and everything else?
Just, I really don't have a website at this time. I kind of just operate off of Facebook and Twitter. I have the same handle on both sites. It's at Spank City Hall. And on my Twitter feed, I did save a moment there that has a lot of tweets about the founding of the Indiana Tea Party that links source documentation. So for any citizen journalists out there that kind of want to dig into the early roots of the Tea Party movement and how it was founded, I point you right to it.
Outstanding. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for coming on. This was definitely one for the books. And, you know, thank you for your time and everything you're doing. Greatly appreciate it.
I greatly appreciate your time today, too, and I wish you, like, all the success in the world with your podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. So, folks, you know, if you appreciate these conversations, if you appreciate these stories, go ahead and do me just a tiny favor, please. Please go ahead and check out the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and drop us a 5-star rating and an awesome review. That will help us get in those trending charts like we were in 2017. It helps us spread this message, have this conversation, and advance the cause of liberty. And as always, if you can't get enough of the show, go ahead and submit $1 pledges or higher on Patreon. That way you get exclusive swag content and so much more. As always, be good to your neighbor. Go out and treat yourself. And be good, America. I'm Remso W. Martinez. Good night.
Stay up to date with the latest news and updates by visiting
RemsoRepublic.com.
Hey, this is Lloyd Bailey, the Armed Lutheran, host of the Armed Lutheran Radio Podcast, reminding you that the podcast you're listening to is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Check out all the great content at selfdefenseradio.net.